Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. The Rakha Vinita Sutta of the Relay Chariot. I think, this one and the next one, they both are basically, you know how something is expounded for more than one sutra. I think when they collected them, they put them sort of in categories. When the Buddha talked about a particular thing, they would put that one, and then the next one that he talked about that same subject, they put it right after. Just makes sense to me from the way the book is laid out. So thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Rajagaha in the bamboo grove, the squirrel's sanctuary. Sounds like a good place for me. Does somebody else want to read?
Okay. Then a number of bhikkhus from the Blessed One's native land, who had spent the rains there, went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, sat down on one side. The Blessed
Let's
One.
Let's see what the footnote is. Which one is that? That's like 285. The parenthetical specification is supplied from M.A. The Buddha's native land is Kapilavatu at the foot of the Himalayas. Okay.
After paying homage to him, sat down at one side. The Blessed One asked them, Bhikkhus, who in my native land is esteemed by the bhikkhus there, by his companions in the holy life, in this way? Having few wishes himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on fewness of wishes. Content himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on contentment. Secluded himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on seclusion. Aloof from society himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on aloofness from society. Energetic himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on arousing energy. Attaining to virtue himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on the attainment of virtue. Attained to concentration himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on the attainment of concentration. Attained to wisdom himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on the attainment of wisdom. Attained to deliverance himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on the attainment of deliverance. Attained to the knowledge and vision of deliverance himself, he talks to the bhikkhus on the attainment of the knowledge and vision of deliverance. 286.
Oh, yeah, right. Thanks. I was so enthralled, I forgot to talk. The last five items form a set called the five aggregates of Dharma, Dhammakanda. Deliverance is identified with the noble fruits, the knowledge and vision of deliverance, with reviewing knowledge. So do you want to hear more about that, or is that okay?
What is the noble fruit?
They would be a stream entry, once return, non-returner, and an arahat. Those are definitely the noble fruits of the path.
See.
He is one who advises, informs, instructs, urges.
Oh yeah, urges.
146.
Yeah. The last 248 what? Urges?
Wait, 146 for urges.
That's a different letter.
Oh no, that's different lettering. That just shows that it's like in the original Pali language, that would be another verse starting.
Oh, I see, okay.
Yeah.
Rouses and gladdens his companions in the holy life. Venerable Sir, the venerable Punam Mataniputta is so esteemed in the Blessed One's native land by the bhikkhus, there by his companions in the holy
life. By the
bhikkhus
there?
By the bhikkhus there, by his companions in the Holy Light.
Okay. Venerable Punya. See, it's got two dots under the end?
Yes.
So that makes it a slight nasal. Punya.
Yeah.
Idamte Punya Kamang.
Okay, good.
That's the word, Punya, right there. That's the same word. Punya Mantaniputta. I belonged to a Brahmin family and was ordained by Venerable Anya, and that's even more. This one is Punya and this is Anya. It's a little more because it's got this, what do they call those things, Spanish end things?
Tinglies?
Is it tingly? Tingly? No.
Tilda.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's like Hilda, only Tilda. Right. Thank you. And so, where is it? Kondanya, at Kapila Watu, where he continued to reside until he decided to visit the Buddha at Sawati. He was later declared by the Buddha the most eminent bhikkhu among the preachers of Dharma. So, that's his history in the Sangha. They're just telling you how he fits in. Okay. Yeah. It's nice to know who was who. And some of them you know because it says such and such from, you know, the Scarecrow Village was a dirty, rotten liar, or, you know, but this one doesn't give you that information, so they just footnote it in.
Now on that occasion, the Venerable Sariputta was seated near the Blessed One. Then it occurred to the Venerable Sariputta, it is a gain for the Venerable Puna Matane Puna Putta. It is a great gain for him that his wise companions in the holy life praise him point by point in the teacher's presence. Perhaps sometime or other we might meet the Venerable Punya Matane Putta and have some conversation with him. Then, when the Blessed One had stayed at Rajaka as long as he chose.
The A, first A has the bar over it, so that's the long one. Rajaka.
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 Stayed at Rajaka as long as he chose. He set out to wander by stages to Sawati. Wandering by stages, he eventually arrived at Sawati. And there he lived in Jetta's Grove and at Patinga's Park. The Venerable Puna Matane Putta heard the Blessed One had arrived at Sawati and is living in Jetta's Grove, Anatta Pendigas Park. Then the Venerable Punya Matane Putta set his resting place in order and, taking his outer robe and bowl, set out to wander by stages to Sawati. Wandering by stages, he eventually arrived at Sawati and went to Jetta's Grove, Anapatinga's Park, to see the Blessed One. After paying homage to the Blessed One, he sat down at one side of the Blessed One, instructed, urged, roused, and gladdened him with talk on the Dharma. Then the Venerable Punya Matane Putta, instructed, urged, roused, and gladdened by the Blessed One's talk on the Dharma, delighted and rejoiced in the Blessed One's words, rose from his seat, and after paying homage to the Blessed One, keeping him on his right, he went to the blind man's grove for a day's abiding.
If you ever go to a monastery, you'll know exactly how to act. Mm-hmm. Keep them on your right and walk around. And it's all here. Mm-hmm. Same tradition still applies in the Southern School Monastery. Mm-hmm.
Then a certain bhikkhu went to the Venerable Sariputta and said to him, "Friend, Sariputta, the bhikkhu Punya Mataniputta, of whom you have always spoken highly, has just been instructed, urged, roused, and gladdened by the Blessed One with talk of the Dharma. After delighting and rejoicing in the Blessed One's words, he rose from his seat, and after paying homage to the Blessed One, keeping him on his right, he has gone to the blind man's grove for the day's abiding." Then the Venerable Sariputta quickly picked up his mat
and
followed close behind the Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Punya Mataniputta, keeping his head in sight.
And then he didn't really crowd him, but he just made sure he could see his head ahead through the jungle.
Then the Venerable Punya Mataniputta entered the blind man's grove and sat down for the day's abiding at the root of a tree. The Venerable Sariputta also entered the blind man's grove and sat down for the day's abiding at the root of a tree. Then, when it was evening, the Venerable Sariputta arose from meditation, went to the Venerable Punyamatanaputta, and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and said to the Venerable Punyamatanaputta, "Is the holy life lived under our Blessed One Friend?
Is the holy life lived under our Blessed One Friend?
Is the holy life lived under our Blessed One Friend? Yes, friend. But friend, is it for the sake of purification of virtue that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One? No, friend. Then is it for the sake of purification of mind that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One? No, friend. Then is it for the sake of purification of view that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One? No, friend. Then is it for the sake of purification by overcoming doubt that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One? No, friend. Then is it for the sake of purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One? No, friend. Then is it for the sake of purification by knowledge and vision of the way that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One?
Of the way. Purification by knowledge and vision
of the way.
Way
that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One. No, friend. Then is it for the sake of purification by knowledge and vision that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One? No, friend. 288.
Oh. I'm so anxious to know what it was.
I thought it was windows.
Although these seven purifications, the Sata Visuddhi, are mentioned elsewhere in the Pali Canon, with two added, purification by wisdom and purification by deliverance, it is curious that they are not analyzed as is set anywhere in the Nikayas. That's one collection of the Tipitaka, the Nikayas. See, like Majjhima Nikaya, Digha Nikaya, right, like that. And this becomes even more puzzling when both these great disciples seem to recognize them as a fixed group of doctrinal categories. The sevenfold scheme forms, however, the scaffolding for the entire Visuddhi Magga. There you go. Which defines the different stages by means of the fully developed commentarial traditions on concentration and insight meditation. In brief, purification of virtue, sila visuddhi, is the unbroken adherence to the moral precepts one has undertaken, explained by Visuddhi Magga with reference to the moral training of a bhikkhu as the fourfold purification of virtue. Purification of mind, citta visuddhi, is the overcoming of the five hindrances through the attainment of access, concentration, and the jhanas. You know, remember what the five hindrances are? You know, desire for an experience other than that which is present. Remember them? Anger, you know them? We don't need to go through them again. We can go through them later if you want. Okay, where were we? Fourfold purification. Overcoming of the five hindrances through the attainment of access, concentration, and the jhanas. And why that's true is because when you experience access, concentration, and the jhanas, your mind does not want something that is not present. You realize that the only place you're really going to find happiness is in the present. So you're not caught by hope or fear or by thinking you should be different. Or then when you have experiences of access, of just being in the present moment, you know this yourself. Have any of you ever been in love? Can I see a show of hands on that one, please? You never had a child? Well, were you in love? Well, I want to see your hands here. Have you never been in love? You ever loved a teacher? Well, come on. And you? You already put your hand up? You better have. And you did, of course. So you know that in that moment of just being concentrated and friendly and interested, there wasn't anywhere else to be, was there? Was there? And it's when you go out of that state that you have the problems, right? But in that state, it's like the seven offering bowls, isn't it? It just brings you to that moment of purification of mind. Through the attainment of access concentration, that means being totally with a wholesome mind focused on one thing. You know? Whether it's a new pair of skis or, you know, a Nintendo game, it doesn't matter. It's nice to know that, isn't it? That's purification of mind. But then the next moment it passes, and then we tend to grasp after it or think that there's something we should have got there, right? But to actually just realize, oh, I know that state, and it came in me, it must still be here. It's quite different, isn't it? So that if you have that experience often enough, then that's purification of mind. Purification of view, ditti visuddha, visuddhi, is the understanding that defines the nature of the five aggregates constituting a living being. Purification view is when you see that the self is not the body, the self is not feeling, the self is not perception. The self is not mental formations or, you know, the flowing mind states that come and go. And the self is not consciousness. That they are empty of a fixed identity. Aren't they? So that's what that's talking about. Do you want me to explain it this in such detail? Is that interesting to you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Good. So, where was I? Oh, ditti visuddhi. Understanding it defines the nature of the five aggregates constituting a living being. That those five aggregates are present wherever there is a living being, whatever level of sentience, those five aggregates are present. But they are not a fixed self. Purification by overcoming doubt. Kanka vitara na visuddhi is this understanding of conditionality. Dependent on this arises. When this ceases, that stops. Right? Nothing arises without cause. Dependent origination. Beautiful teaching. Purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path. Maga, maga, nyanda, dasana, visuddhi. Is the correct discrimination between the false path of the ecstatic, exhilarating experiences and the true path of insight into anicca, into impermanence, suffering, and not self, into impermanence, anicca, dukkha, anatta. Is that good? Do you want me to say more? Is that good? Does that come up in the present?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yes, it does. So it's in the present. What's your problem? Something has to arrive. But when you start clinging to that, rather than so that it blocks out the present, you know, the difference between wanting something or knowing you aspire to something and naming that aspiration and then dropping it, and focusing on what is present, is a big difference between those two. It's a world of difference. One is you trust yourself to aspire to something, you know that you want something, and then you say, and I name that I want that, I hope I can get it soon. Now meanwhile, oh good, I've got us. How fortunate. Sometimes you have to hold your aspiration for a long time. Can be lifetimes. I held an aspiration once for 3 years. Because I really wanted it. It was just every year I just thought. Every day it came up. Yeah, as soon as I'm able, I'm going to do that. And then 3 years, one day somebody said, well, it's time you did that. out of nowhere. It doesn't matter when, you know. But we think that, you know, if we're only in the present, that we won't remember to pay the bills. But they come to the door. Mm-hmm. That's in the present. Mm-hmm. You know? If we don't pay them, somebody will come to the door then, too. It's all in the present. And when you're really in the present, there is no past or future. That's an interesting idea. It feels a lot better than trying to be other than you are, too. It makes a big difference. Is that good? Okay. And this thing about the correct discrimination between this false path of the ecstatic, exhilarating experiences and the true path of insight into anicca, dukkha, and anatta, that is like so important. Because until you have actually sorted out the difference between like and dislike and aspiration, you can get really tricked by that one. You know, you have some experience, you have an insight where suddenly you totally understand emptiness. And you can actually decide, because it transcends anything you've had before, that you've got the path. And you're ecstatic with it. So, you know, our beloved teacher used to talk about that a lot. He used to talk about how people would say it doesn't matter because everything is empty. They're free because they understand emptiness, and so then they act an I understanding. Act in ways that have an emptiness land on their door that they don't quite think is appropriate for their high spiritual condition. Did that make sense to you, what I just said?
No, not really.
Okay, so I know that everything is empty, so it doesn't matter what I do. You know, God is love. Somebody else was telling me, God is love. Everything is a manifestation of love. And I was so tempted to just drop an iron on their toe, smiling, out of love. Is this love? No. Because there is this, it's like how we live in the West. Sure, we've got problems, and we got food, and it's cold outside, but it's quite comfy in here, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And we actually think that that's how it should be. And we live like that day after day, week after week. And so we actually feel that that's normal. So we actually feel not how fortunate we are, but we feel how pissed off we are if electricity goes off. Or you run out of gas. Or, you know? You had the wrong day to make a sale that you wanted to go to. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of like 5 or 10 a day that each of you do?
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Put something down and not remember where it put it. Doesn't that kind of tick you off? Any of you ever done that today? Imagine my surprise.
Yeah.
Everybody but one or two people put up their hands for that one. Think of that. So, you know, but you actually think that you should remember, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen when your mind's ability to hold the control of the outer starts to slip? Because it will, you know. It will. Not somebody else, you. What will happen then if you actually think that's who you are? what will happen if your father, mother, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, husband, wife starts to have that happen to them? A little brain tumor or something. What would happen? Would you start getting upset because your identity depended on who they were? Huh? Would you?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where is this kind of thing? Like, okay, I can see emptiness as long as nobody challenges my view of normality, you know? So that's what this says here. It's talking about the correct purification by knowledge and vision of what is path and what is not path. We can have experiences that are very profound and mistake them for path because we don't see how the I is involved in there. Isn't that interesting? And especially if you have a little bit of experience of jhana, where you had some experiences of consciousness without subject object. So then you assume you've got that, you know? And then you assume that you know what path is and what path is not. Because some other experience happens of a great insight into emptiness in another way. And you think, well, that's it, I'm enlightened. So this is a point that I think a lot of people don't really know about, and I like to kind of, you notice, go on and on about it. You got it? Shall I shut up and shall we go on with the rest of this footnote then? Okay. So purification by knowledge and vision of the way. I love this. Patipada jnana dasana visuddhi. It's like little tap dance, patipada, patipada. Walking, pati is path, pada is foot, walking the path, knowledge and vision of the way, comprise that so that to understand the when you have any of those experiences, what is the way to ensure that you are actually on the path, not just comfy because your thermostat is working? You know, because it's a nice difference whether your thermostat works or whether you're actually accomplished something. Because all of us are going to be put out in the cold sometime. Every one of us. Damn. Comprise the ascending series of insight knowledges up to the supramundane paths. And purification by knowledge and vision, jnana dasana visuddhi, is the supramundane path. It's the supramundane path. Okay? That's it. That footnote.
But friend, is purification of virtue, final nirvana, without change, clean? No, friend. Then is purification...
You went to the next paragraph. We're at the beginning of 10, dear.
Sorry.
That's
okay.
Fine.
Friend, when asked.
Friend, when asked.
But friend, is it for the sake of purification of virtue that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One? You replied, no, friend, when asked. Then is it for the sake of purification of mind, purification of view, purification by overcoming doubt, purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path, purification by knowledge and vision of the way, purification by knowledge and vision that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One?
You replied, no, friend.
For the sake of what then, friend? Is the holy life lived under the Blessed One? Friend, it is for the sake of final nirvana without clinging that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One. 289.
You have a question?
No.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad I got somebody to keep me going. Glosses Anupadana Parinibbana as Apayachaya Parinibbana, final Nibbana that has no condition. Explaining that Upadana has two meanings, grasping, as in the usual passage on the four types of clinging, and condition, Pachaya, as illustrated by this passage. The commentators explain final Nibbana without clinging either as the fruit of arahatship, because it cannot be grasped by any of the four types of clinging, or as Nibbana, the unconditioned, because it has not arisen through any condition. Did you follow why he was saying that? Because it's basically impossible to name something that is without name. So they have two ways of trying to point to that experience. All of our names are generally subject-object relation, aren't they? Mm-hmm. They're all relative. Mm-hmm. They're symbols. Subject-object. Mm-hmm. Can be subject-object within yourself, right? If you're thinking about your son or something, it's subject-object, isn't it? And then thought. But the experience of Nibbana transcends subject-object. So how to refer to it is very difficult, because all words are essentially relative in relation to. So it can be talked about final Nibbana that has no condition, or final Nibbana without clinging. So it can either be something that is unconditioned, or where there is no clinging, no subject. There's no a cause, and there is no subject in a certain way to which it happens. Or and if you really think about that, that gets you into some very deep ground, doesn't it? Then you start looking at, you know, some of the teachings about Nibbana or enlightenment or awakening, and how they say you've already got it. You're just caught in ignoring. It's not anything we have to attain. It's more that we have to uncover. That makes sense? So it's sort of like moving in that direction, and it's quite a profound idea, isn't it? The commentators explain final Nibbana without clinging either as the fruit of arahatship, because it cannot be grasped by any of the four types of clinging, or as Nibbana, the unconditioned, because it has not arisen through any condition. There it is.
But friend, is purification a virtue, final Nibbana without clinging? No, friend. Then is purification of mind total Nibbana without clinging?
Total or final?
Oh, sorry, final Nibbana without clinging. No, friend. Then is purification of view final Nibbana without clinging? No, friend. Then is purification by overcoming doubt final Nibbana without clinging? No, friend. Then is purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path final Nibbana without clinging? No, friend. Then is purification by knowledge and vision of the way final Nibbana without clinging? No, friend. Then is purification by knowledge and vision final Nibbana without clinging? No, friend. But friend, is final Nibbana without clinging to be attained without these states? No. When asked, but friend, is the purification of virtual final Nibbana without clinging? You reply, no, friend. When asked, then is purification of mind, purification of view, purification by overcoming doubt, purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path, purification by knowledge and vision of the way, purification by knowledge and vision, final nibbana without clinging. You replied, no, friend. And when asked, but friend, is final nibbana without clinging to be attained without these states? You replied, no, friend. But how, friend, should the meaning of these statements be regarded? Friend, if the Blessed One had described purification of virtue as final nibbana without clinging, he would have described what is still accompanied by clinging as final nibbana without clinging. If the Blessed One had described purification of mind...
Did you get that, Bob? Mm-hmm. Your accent on it was a little bit strange, so just yes or no me. No.
I'm not sure.
Thank you. So that's no.
No.
Thank you. So read it again a little slower.
Friend, if the Blessed One...
Friend, if the Blessed One...
Had described...
If the Blessed One... If...
If the Blessed One...
Had described...
purification of virtue as final nibbana without clinging, he would have described
what is still accompanied by clinging as final nibbana without clinging. Because purification of virtue, there's still clinging. But he would be saying that if there was described what is... He would have described what is still accompanied by clinging, that is purification of virtue. He would have described that as final nirvana without clinging. But it isn't. Purification of virtue still has clinging. Have you ever clung to being purified?
Yeah.
Well, I'm so surprised. Oops, so have I. Oh, my goodness. Have you ever clung to being bad? Oh, me too. Have you ever clung to say going beyond good and bad? Yep. You bet you're sweet, Bippy. Right? Have you ever clung to understanding the emptiness of five aggregates? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Big time. Except for a long time, consciousness was a hard one for me. I really had trouble believing that consciousness was, you know, empty of an inherent identity. I was pretty sure that was my saving grace. Fought hard to keep that one. You understand? Did the Buddha ever describe these things when they were perfected, these seven steps, as nibbana without clinging? No. Why? Because in every one of those stages there's clinging. However subtle. There's subject-object. And when you actually practice morality and you actually practice perfecting virtue, perfecting feeling good about your actions, there's a real identity with that, isn't there? Don't you think? Don't you have an identity about what's the right or wrong thing for you to do? So, you know, is that final nirvana?
Well, you're working with cause and effect, right? So, yeah, you know right away.
Hmm?
You're working with cause and effect, so...
Yeah. But, there is this feeling of like, oh, well, I'm not going to do that again, or I'm learning this. But that's not nibbana. It's still purification of view. Mm. So that's pretty straightforward, is it? Okay.
Should I start beginning at 13, yeah?
No, were you on 13?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where were we? You got to the end of the list, didn't you? Are we at 290 yet, or are you just sort of halfway? Oh yeah, start at the beginning, because I know where we are. But
friend, if the Blessed One had described purification of virtue as final nibbana without clinging, he would have described what is still accompanied by clinging as final nibbana without clinging. If the Blessed One had described purification of mind,
purification of view, purification by overcoming doubt, purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path, purification by knowledge and vision of the way, purification by knowledge and vision is final nibbana without clinging, he would have described what is still accompanied by clinging as
nibbana without clinging.
Yeah. Oh, 290. Uh, M. Aid explains that the first six stages are, quote, accompanied by clinging in the sense both of being conditioned and of existing in one who still has grasping, the seventh stage being supramundane only in the sense of being conditioned. So the last one, because it's conditioned. Okay.
And if final nibbana without clinging were to be attained without these states, then an ordinary person would have attained final nibbana. For an ordinary person is without these states.
Did you get that? So the Buddha didn't... He's saying that if these states were final nibbana without clinging, the Buddha would have said so, and he didn't. And if final nibbana without clinging were present in somebody who didn't practice these states, the Buddha would have said that too, but he didn't. So it isn't that these states are final nibbana, or is that the final nibbana without clinging were to be attained without these states, and yet you can't attain final nibbana without practicing these states. These states are not final nibbana, and yet you can't attain final nibbana without practicing these states. Did you want me to say it again, or is that good?
I got it.
Yeah. Because if you could attain final nibbana without these states, then everybody would be awakened. Because most people, you know, people haven't developed those states, right? Then an ordinary person would have attained final nibbana, for an ordinary person is without these states. Mm-hmm. Okay?
As to that friend, I shall give you a simile. For some wise men, understanding the meaning of a statement by means of a simile. Suppose that King Pasenadi of Kosala, while living at Sawati, had some urgent business to settle at Saketa.
Boy, you're going to be so at home in India.
And that between Sawati and Saketa, seven relay chariots were kept ready for him. Then King Pasenadi of Kosala, leaving Sawati through the inner palace door, would mount the first relay chariot, and by means of the first relay chariot, he would arrive at the second relay chariot. And then he would dismount from the first chariot and mount the second chariot, and by means of the second chariot, he would arrive at the third chariot, and by means of the third chariot, he would arrive at the fourth chariot, by means of the fourth chariot, he would arrive at the fifth chariot, means of the fifth chariot, he would arrive at the sixth chariot, and by means of the sixth chariot, he would arrive at the seventh chariot, and by means of the seventh chariot, he would arrive at the inner palace door in Saketa. Then, when he had come to the inner palace door, his friends and acquaintances, his kinsmen and relatives, would ask him, "Sire, did you come from Sawati to the inner palace door in Saketa by means of this relay chariot?" How then should King Pasenadi of Kosala answer in order to answer correctly? In order to answer correctly, friend, he should answer thus. Here, while living at Sawati, I had some urgent business to settle at Saketa. And between Sawati and Saketa, seven relay chariots were kept ready for me. Then, leaving Sawati through the inner palace door, I mounted the first relay chariot, and by means of the first relay chariot, I arrived at the second relay chariot, and then I dismounted from the first chariot and mounted the second chariot. By means of the second chariot, I arrived at the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh chariot. And by means of the seventh chariot, I arrived at the inner palace door in Saketa. In order to answer correctly, he should answer thus. So too, friend, purification of virtue is for the sake of reaching purification of mind. Purification of mind is for the sake of reaching purification of view. Purification of view is for the sake of reaching purification by overcoming doubt. Purification by overcoming doubt is for the sake of reaching purification of knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path. Purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path is for the sake of reaching purification by knowledge and vision of the way. Purification by knowledge and vision of the way is for the sake of reaching purification by knowledge and vision. Purification by knowledge and vision is for the sake of reaching final nibbana without clinging. It is for the sake of final nibbana, without clinging, that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One.
And so that's the answer to his question.
When this was said, the Venerable Sariputta asked the Venerable Mataniputta, what is the Venerable One's name, and how do his companions in holy life know the Venerable One? My name is Punya, friend, and my companions in the holy life know me as Mataniputta. It is wonderful, friend. It is marvelous. Each prolonged question has been answered.
Each?
Profound question.
I mean, they weren't prolonged, but I think they were actually profound.
I mean, that's just a... That's me.
We liked it.
Each profound question has been answered point by point by the Venerable Punya Mataniputta. As a learned disciple who understands the teacher's dispensation correctly, it is a gain for his companions in the holy life. It is a great gain for them that they have the opportunity to see and honor the Venerable Punya Mataniputta, even if it were carried by the Venerable Punya. Even if it were by carrying the Venerable Punya Mataniputta.
Mantaniputta
about on a cushion on their heads, that his companions in the holy life would get the opportunity to see and honor him. It would be a great gain for them, a great gain for them. It is a great gain for us, a great gain for us that we have the opportunity to see and honor the Venerable Punya Mataniputta. When this was said, the Venerable Punya Mataniputta asked the Venerable Sariputta, what is the Venerable One's name, and how do companions in the holy life know the Venerable One? My name is Upasatissa, friend, and my companions in the holy life know me as Sariputta. Indeed, friend, we did not know that we were talking with the Venerable Sariputta, the disciple who is like the teacher himself.
The two main disciples of the Buddha. One of them was Sariputta, and the other was Moggallana. So which one are we at?
292.
292. Says that this is the highest praise that can be spoken of the disciple. To say that a disciple is like the Buddha himself is the highest praise.
If we had known that this was the Venerable Sariputta, we should not have said so much. It is wonderful, friend. It is marvelous. Each profound question has been poised point by point by the Venerable Sariputta as a learned disciple who understands the teacher's dispensation correctly. It is a gain for his companions in the holy life. It is a great gain for them that they have the opportunity to see and honor the Venerable Sariputta. Even if they were carrying the Venerable Sariputta on a cushion on their heads, that his companions in the holy life would get the opportunity to see and honor him. It would be a great gain for them, a great gain for them. And it is a great gain for us, a great gain for us that we have the opportunity to see and honor the Venerable Sariputta. Thus it was that these two great beings rejoiced in each other's good words.
So you never know who's following you in the blind man's woods. Mm-hmm. Isn't that where this took place?
Yes.
You just never know. Any questions? Answers? Comments? Complaints? Pretty straightforward?
Seems it could be read several times.
There's a lot of information in it, but, you know, I mean, certainly for me, the real interest here, because I've had the opportunity of sitting down with this book in a place where I could meditate on it and research it, because I read this whole book in Thailand, and I lived in Thailand for the 2 years, almost 2 years I was there. And it has been extremely useful for me so many times. One of these sutras will suddenly come up in my mind when I'm trying to think, well, wait a minute, I've kind of lost my direction in my practice, and then I'll remember, oh yeah, the Suttimagga is laid out, what? 7 points. Okay, which point? And go back to the first point. Which one don't I have firm foundation on at the moment? Where has habit overtaken awareness? So there it is, you know. Sutta 25, short little sutta. Saying, you know, well, each one of these steps are necessary to get there. They're each a relay vehicle on the path. And you notice it doesn't say anything about you have to be intelligent, or you have to be beautiful, or they have to be wealthy, or, you know. It doesn't say anything about your presentation. It's talking about the inner. It's not about the world and your relation to the world. It's about how you are seen in standing. It's about how your heart is seen in standing. Because without the heart, the mind can't function well. So I for me, the value of these classes really is giving you a sense of the orderliness, the precision, the richness, the beauty. And quite frankly, although of course I am misguided in many ways, I find that whatever I learn in the Tibetan or the Vajrayana teaching is also in the Hinayana or Theravada teaching. Different language, different method. In the Vajrayana, in order to develop charity or patience, you do visualizations and offerings. Yeah. And so you perform these rituals, which start changing your mind. Mm. You can do the same thing in the Theravada. You perform a particular set of rules, you recite them, you know, once a week, but certainly maybe you do a short form once a week, but every full moon you run through them all. Well, you know, they have an effect. You know, video games have an effect. Don't they? All those things have an effect. You know, if you're always subject to feeling like you have to be smart when you're a kid, that has an effect when you're grown up, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. There's this kind of sense of what you have to always have an answer or something, don't you? You have that kind of pressure on yourself, don't you? So if you started repeating, to be really intelligent, I have to just be present without knowing. That might be kind of neat, right? That's like an arising yoga to perform awareness in the present, which would be smart. Would be smart, wouldn't it? Would cut out a lot of aggravation in your life. And you can imagine, to be really effective in life, I should be this glowing, angelic figure who smells like, you know, cherry blossoms in Victoria in the spring and tastes like cherries in the summer in Okanagan. And totally aware of here and now. And so you imagine yourself like that, pretty soon you think you smell good and you probably taste good. And, you know, and you're being present. And, you know, lo and behold, you start falling in love with everybody. So, of course, you know, being them, they fall in love with you. Hmm. And what else, what are they going to do? I mean, if you're in love with somebody, don't they fall in love with you? I mean, what choice do they have? I mean, obviously you have good taste. Right? So each one of these is, like, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Sudhimagga. We've certainly touched on it quite a few times. The path of purification. The 40 classical meditations in it. You've never heard me talk about that, mm-hmm. at least. And they're set out according to these seven characteristics that are the basis of this sutra. The whole Visuddhimagga is those seven. It's a very valid path. It predates the Buddha, Visuddhimagga. The actual teaching itself, the meditations and the predate the Buddha. The Buddha systematized it in the seven more and added two meditations. That's what they say. They say that. I have heard them. Thus have I heard. So, any questions? Answers? Comments? Complaints? Yes, sir. Oh, did I do some brilliant stuff today?
Damn, I wish I'd been here.
On the offering bowls.
Basically, a shrine is set up on three levels. And then there's generally, very often, there is a little bit of a lower level where the offering bowls usually are, but it's fine to put them on that level too. And this is the level for body, this is the level for speech, and this is the level for mind. Right? Is that good? Mind has two characteristics, clarity and emptiness. Speech is has three sense, three ways of interacting consciousness and form. Speech has a form, but it has three senses that are particularly strong for it, and those are mind, sight, and sound. Body has past, present, future, linear time, six senses. Speech is more like a globe. So, it isn't past, present, future. It's like when you're in the energy, the speech energy of a particular feeling, all the times you have had that feeling are right there for you. You know that. When you see a baby, I'm going to go for babies tonight, I don't know why. When you see a newborn baby, oh, because there was this great one in the AG. It's like 4 months old, and she's like lying in her crib, and I came up and said, hello, and she went, woo, and giggled. So like, that's it, you know, I'll be like gaga for a week. I'm so easy, I'm such a pushover. So that when you're in that state, you start remembering all the times that you have enjoyed a baby. Then the kid starts to cry. And you think of all the times when you had to go in the other room or leave town. Right? Don't you? Mm-hmm. When the emotion changes, you can remember all the other times where you had that reason where you should leave or something, right? So it's like a globe. Have you, any of you ever been angry? Have you ever been angry at a specific person? Or you use them anyway? You've never been angry, Claire? Oh, and you've never been. Oh, you have. Okay. That's just close enough. Okay. And when you were angry at that person, when you were thinking about it, did you only think about that one thing they did? Oh, bullshit. You collected all the evidence that you ever, you know. And just like my mother, you just did that. And furthermore, and, you know, and three times this week you did that. And I remember, it's like this globe of all the related. The energy brings up all the related perceptions, doesn't it? Do you see it? How many of you don't believe me from your own experience?
That's true.
Okay, well, there's a little gap there. I wasn't sure. From your own experience, you know that when you're in one emotional state, it's like it brings forward all your memories so that you start telling somebody, oh, that reminds me of when I... Right? But when you're in linear time, it's past, present, future. In the body, you're working past, present, future. That is to say, you're working cause and effect. Right? You're saying, okay, this is arising, where do I want it to go? Right? How am I going to work this past, present, future? Because that's what the body is, right? Body is basically four seasons: spring, summer, autumn, winter. We call winter death. Right? Birth, growing, bearing fruit, dissolution. Right? Does that make sense to you? So, you know, all of your plans are sort of run by those seasons or by that past, present, future kind of thing. And how you and your body certainly teaches you that big time. So with this one, what you want to do is ensure that you have clarity and confidence in your ability to work the physical world. So the body level, there are seven offerings that you put on it, that level. And you would have, like, you know, pictures of your teachers or, you know, that kind of thing, whatever you would have on it. And you would have water, the two waters are called an ocean of hearing, H-E-A-R-I-N-G, but I like to think it could be either way, H-E-R-E as well, an ocean of hearing. So that your first one is water for drinking, to cut down the thirst for the future, water for washing the feet, letting go of the dust of the past. So you've got an ocean of hearing as soon as you do that. And then the next one is flowers. So then the present moment is blossoming, opening, potential. Incense, you know, the thing about incense is that you light it and everything smells sweeter. When you think that everybody is probably, on the whole, pretty nice, does that make them all sweeter? When you think they're a bunch of fucking bastards, does that make them sweeter? Son of a gun. So when your sense is kindness and generosity, morality, that's what you expect from others, right? And if someone isn't moral to you, you think, oh, poor person. Don't you? I hope you do. I hope you don't decide that you're better than them. Because you know you have your bad days too. Oh, geez, you're really caught. Or you're not a victim. I mean, don't do victim. Let me tell you, it is so boring. There, now you know everything there is to know about victim. You don't need to go there. No, instead of that, you have a good reason to practice patience, virtue. You go with the patience. So that's like the sweet smell of morality, incense. You're not in charge of them. You're in charge of you. It's your heart you keep wholesome. And victim is not wholesome. And revenge is not wholesome. It doesn't feel whole, does it? So then the next one, then, of course, is light, wisdom. Suddenly you have a more clear understanding and compassion and wisdom and way of being in the world. Things look brighter. Then the next one is scented water. From India, these all come from India. When you were waiting for someone, very hot climate most of the time, when you were waiting for some beloved guest, some great love of your being who was coming and it was hot out, you would be at the door with some cool scented water, waiting for them. So it represents that faith, that anticipation, that joy of waiting for the beloved guest to arise. I'm about to awaken. Scented water. That is to say, your mind is open and you know what you want. Need, eh? That's called faith. And then the last one, and I said earlier, you notice that faith comes after wisdom, after clarity. You don't have clarity after faith. You don't say, okay, I hope this is right. This is what I believe. I know I'm right. I'm right. This is what I believe. You don't use your faith to give you clarity. Mm-hmm. Having clarity, then you use faith. So that whoever comes becomes the beloved visitor. Because it's always an opportunity. And that's, you know, one of the most important teachings. In the Tantra, they say, like, where you are is your beloved consort. This place right now has everything we need to awaken. Wherever this place and right and now are, that's the four directions of awakening right here. And so then comes with that faith, coming after the clarity, faith, then using it, and then nectar, food, the sweet, holy, they call it the holy food of meditation. That is to say, the food for your inner being. Not the food for self-grasping, but the food for your inner being. And then the bell, the sound, the inner sound. Of realization, of understanding. And so that's how you work the inner, the outer, and when you work the outer, then you come to the inner, and the inner either has 5 or 10 offering bowls. So the 5 or 10 are either the 5 poisons, they're called. This is, I'm describing particularly a tantric, a Vajrayana, or a Mahayana shrine. I have seen different variations, but a lot of similarities in southern school shrines and when I lived in Thailand too. But with the inner one, you have the 5 bowls, which are the 5 poisons, greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy, which are the 5 energies of how consciousness and the elements bond. And they either bond for self-grasping or they bond for transcendence in every moment. So greed, hatred, and delusion, pride and jealousy. Greed or lust has to do with passion and it bonds with fire. Hatred has to do, so is sympathetic joy when it's not greed, sympathetic joy. Hatred has to do with water and bonds and is compassion when it's not self-grasping. Delusion bonds with space. Space, and has to do the aggregate of form, and has to do I had two different lists in my mind, and I switched lists.
Oh no.
Okay. Greed has to do with lust, passion, lust, and when it's transformed, is sympathetic joy. Hatred has to do with passion. Yeah. So it transforms into compassion. Delusion transforms into the wisdom of the ground of being, Dharma Dhatu, wisdom of Dharma Dhatu. And pride transforms into loving kindness. And jealousy transforms into equanimity. So you got the four boundless states arising in the present moment. And so what you're doing is you're taking the five poisons and turning them into the five transcendental powers. So you're taking the emotional states that you catch yourself globing in, right? Mm-hmm. But when it's hatred, you immediately turn that accuracy, because isn't hate accurate? Mm-hmm. Doesn't it just see the point? You see the point of, like that Chenrezig sadhana we did on the retreat. May I see all beings as caught in suffering. And may I be clearly not say, I am not. There is clarity and seeing, no difference out there than in here. If you're with somebody who is angry and you don't like it, you know exactly how they feel. So immediately, you have a sense of compassionately realizing the suffering of anger. Compassion means you have the space to see something. You're not driven by it. You're with the passion, but you're not that caught in whatever. And when you see someone suffering, regardless of who they are, you just see them suffering, immediately you wish them to be free of suffering. And when you understand that you wish somebody to be free of suffering, immediately you realize, well, the suffering is impermanent. When you really understand it, don't you? It's when you decide that you're caught in it that you don't see its impermanence. Isn't that true? If somebody is, road raging, I can really think, well, I got to show them. Mm-hmm. Or I can think, oh, poor them, I better move over and let them. This too will pass for them, and I'm not going to feed the flames. Why make it worse? Right? Because you can feel your own irritation at them, like riding right up against you, They go, wait a minute, they're caught in anger, and this is what the anger feels like. Is it nice? No, well, I think I better move over and see if I can relieve it a little bit for them. I mean, they're going to hit a red light sometime anyway. they're going to learn they can't see, the world is a better teacher, so out of compassion, I'll move over. Better than, slowing down and punching them out or something, right? So each one of these becomes, so that's hatred, delusion, I talked about, didn't I? Each one of them becomes their when they're in you, you don't have to pretend they're not there or dress them up or put makeup on or go get a facelift or anything. All you got to do is identify them, because it's the same energy that is hatred is compassion. It just depends on whether it causes you to try to cling to yourself as separate. As soon as you identify, oh, we're both angry, there's freedom. Isn't that true? So they are the speech level offerings because they represent taking the what is communicating, what is creating the space that you're communicating from your energy, and using it regardless of whether it's positive or negative. There is no such thing. It's energy. But using it for the four boundless states arising in a mind that is aspiring for the sake of all beings. The bodhisattva born here, right now, with these states. So they become the offering bowl. So it's like the, you do this offering, which is like the skull cup for that one. So the Pancha Amrita, it's called the five nectars. The inner offering is the five nectars, or the ten. If it's the ten, it's the five nectars and the five aggregates. And this one, the offering is mind, non-clinging, clarity, emptiness, mind. So it's like this. The ongoing flow, you know. Can feel the energy of it, okay. Nice feeling, eh? And then the when all three are offered together, that's called the most secret offering. And that's with the body, the speech, and the mind operating totally, fully in their own clear capacity, all at once equally. One not better than the other. So it becomes the universal consciousness. So it's the most secret, so the offering is just become it for a moment. It's the universe offering to the universe. Or like Ram Dass said one time at a talk, pouring a cup of tea, and he says, God pouring God into God. Is that all right? Yep. The ground of truth, the ground of law. If you really look, everything is bubbling all the time, isn't it? Like, you don't make decisions, do you? You're sort of informed of how the winds are blowing, and you say, oh yes, I've decided to go along with it, only. Right? I mean, really, if you're really honest about it. You can make decisions based on going against how things are bubbling, but eventually you'll change, you will be changed in your course. Because if you decide it's summer and it's this time of year and you go out at 6 o'clock to have a barbecue in your bathing suit, you will eventually come in and put on a coat. Won't you? You know, because the causes and conditions are always changing and moving and flowing and always arising, which is why you hold an aspiration. But then you deal with what is present. Unless you're really into masochism, in which case don't do that. It's fine. The world is endlessly able to accommodate masochists. All right? So you notice this extremely beautiful gold light in your hearts. Right through your body, spreads. Every little cell is just lit up with bodhicitta. The whole room, in fact, every tiniest little speck of material is completely bonded with this speck of the bodhicitta mind. So it's, you start being aware of it outside your body, or you can say the light spreads through the room. Out through the whole world, wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, and mind, just temporarily, it's just assuaged, and you think, whatever wholesomeness has been gathered, they are coming together. You share it with all beings who lose their suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings who lose their suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings who lose their suffering. Thank you for your great concern.